Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. Bad Idea has taken us over once again. It's that damn button. It seems to happen every Sunday where they take us over. So it's my pleasure to welcome Dinesh Shyamdasani and Warren Simons from Bad Idea onto the show. How are you guys doing? Thanks for joining me.
It's Mr. The Button.
Oh, sorry.
It's that damn Mr. The Button.
See, that's probably why he's taking it over. I don't have the proper respect.
All hail the button.
We're doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I really want to thank you guys for joining me. You know, longtime listeners.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys. Longtime listeners of the podcast, you know, they're gonna know that, you know, I know you guys personally, and you know, we're friends, but we're kind of throw that out the window today because I really want to give you guys the opportunity to address some of these rumors that are out there, and talk about, you know, Bad Idea. And I think people have misconceptions, and we talked about it when we had the first takeover last week. I was talking about why you guys aren't doing digital, why you aren't doing trades and that sort of thing. But, you know, coming from me, people are like, well, what does he know? So you're going to get it, everybody, all your listeners, everybody's watching on YouTube. You're going to get it straight from the horse's mouth. And we're going to, I'm not going to pull my punches. You know, we are friends.
I can't wait.
I opened it up to questions, both on the Valiant Fans board. I've had a lot of people reaching out to me on Twitter and social media and such. And these are the questions they want to ask that they're curious about. And it's you know how it is on social media. One thing breeds another rumor kind of thing. So
it's like paradise, bro. It's like paradise. Just
exactly.
Moves down all the way all the time.
Yeah. So I'm not going to pull any punches, listeners. So these are the things you guys want to know, and we're going to get into it. Just as a little warm up, though, I do kind of want to hear about how you guys felt that the launch day went. So we'll start with you, Warren. Obviously, ENIAC, it's been over a week now. How was that launch day for you, that first Wednesday where the books were finally out there, you know, after delaying a year and all that? It was a long time coming. So for you personally, how was launch day?
Oh, it was awesome. It could not have gone any better. I'd say that for two reasons. I remember I remember sending the book to the printer with Dinesh and just thinking to myself, this is the first book that I've shipped in a couple of years. It had been a long time since that had happened. I think I probably, according to one of the sites, I don't know if it's accurate or not, I think I've edited about 1,000 comic books at this point in time.
Nice.
And when we got back into that cycle of getting the covers out and getting the books out and the lettering corrections and last minute culling corrections and the scrambled publishing, you get that rush again. And you understand that you're back in it again.
Left, Warren. You've always been here.
Right. It's I was born in the darkness. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's just visiting. But it was nice to it was really wonderful. And then just to see the reaction, to see that's personally in building the business with Dinesh and, of course, Josh Johns, who's our head of marketing, and Adam Freeman, who's our head of sales, and Hunter, who's our publisher. And really seeing the culmination of the thing he hit on Wednesday, and Carl Ballers, who works with us and who's our editor. It was wonderful to see people sleeping outside, waiting for the books, waiting for the pins. And you never know what the reaction's going to be, man. We've had a lot of success working together over the years. We relaunched EXO, we relaunched Valiant, we saw EXO 1, we saw Bloodshot 1, we saw Divinity, we had a lot of organic hits, we had a lot of big hits, but you never know what the reaction's going to be. So when we started to see the early reviews come in, people were talking about what an amazing job Matt Kent, Doug Braithwaite, and Diego did. It was really nice to see, man, because you never can tell, it's art. But just seeing the outpouring of people waiting on lines and people picking the books up and the books selling out, it was a lot of fun.
Cool. What about you, Dinesh? How was it happening for you?
Oh, yeah. I echo everything Warren's saying. You have to understand, from our standpoint, this is not meant to be a big deal. We didn't expect this to be a big deal. We really thought 25 stores that we're friends with would take pity on us and buy some of these books. And we would just get to make comic books without a big spotlight on it, which meant that we could do kind of what we were interested in. To be sitting here now with the first book being this book that everyone's talking about, that people are scouring to find. And we had Warren, Josh, Adam, myself, Hunter, had a little pool going on what we thought the numbers would look like.
Your audio is a tiny little bit uneven. I don't know if you get
that. Is that right, Chase?
A little bit.
You're a little tinny, yeah.
A little tinny, bro.
Let me try the double. Let's see what happens here. How's that? Is that better?
Little uneven.
Is that better?
That's better.
That's better. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we thought no one would care, man. The fact that we're sitting here and people care is a huge relief to us and kind of a different world than we thought we'd be in. The camping app, Warren and I were on the phone the night before with the buttons, the little pins that we put out there thinking, man, this is going to be embarrassing. No one is going to care. And we saw, I think it was Jonah, post on the Bad Idea forums. He was the first one. We thought to ourselves, oh God, at least we don't look like idiots. One person's out there. We've got one photograph of one person. And then the next morning we wake up and there's an army of people. There's dozens of them. It was just wild. It's been wild.
Yeah, I think Jace also, when Dinesh and I began talking about this thing a little while ago, you know, one of the questions was, you know, we weren't a Valiant anymore. I wasn't a Marvel. You know, is anyone going to notice? Is anyone going to care? I mean, what are we going to sell? To go get a break 2,000 copies? Where can we get to 2,000? You know, so for us, it was really the expectations were very low. We didn't know what would it be, and we were very excited about it. We knew the books would be good. We knew we had top talent, but it was exciting to see, certainly.
Yeah, that was a layup, Jace. Where are the hard questions? You promised us no punches.
We're gonna ramp up.
We're tempting, bro.
We're gonna ramp up to them, and I'm gonna touch on it now, right? Because it really, we're talking about two things here. The quality of the story is, I think, unquestionable. You guys, you've brought on, you know, talent that is known in the industry and is trusted and has been shown to produce great content. You know, guys like Matt Kent and Louis Olosa, Doug Braithwaite, Joshua Dysart, Robert Venditti. So, I mean, these are known quantities, but Bad Idea as a whole is unknown. And so I don't begrudge you guys the fact that, yeah, maybe there wasn't enough first print copies for all the people that wanted them. And we'll get into that, but knowing what you know now, you know, Warren was just talking about you guys having a bet and not knowing, can we get to 2,000? Knowing what you know now, is there anything you wish you'd done differently? I mean, do you wish that first print had been two or three times what you initially decided on, Warren?
It's hard to look back on something that is hopefully successful and then second guess it. All we can really do is work as hard as humanly possible and try to guess correctly. And then hopefully it works. And if it doesn't, just leave it all on the field and kind of just be proud of the effort that we put in. There are a lot of factors here. We're taking our own orders. We have 250 stores. It's I'm not sure anyone's ever done this before, really, to a certain extent, quite like we did. So in hindsight, would I have loved there to have been more copies on the shelves of the first printing if we knew what the demand would be? Sure, of course. But hindsight's 2020. It's there's so many variables here, you know, that we're trying to figure out. We're printing a book for the first time, for the most part. You know, taking orders ourselves for the first time. There are five or six different factors here that all had to line up for there not to have been something like that. And, you know, it's something that in hindsight, if we could go back in time machine, we would put some more stuff out. Sure. But, you know, I'm very happy with how the book's been received. I'm very happy with the stores that have gotten behind us. You know, an enormous part of our huge success at Valiant was that the direct market was the spine of our business then, and it is now. We have enormous faith in our retail partners. And, you know, I'm happy that we were able to send so many people into stores. Hopefully it spilled over and resulted in sales of other titles as well.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. And I know some of this stuff for some of you listeners is going to be a little nuts and bolts kind of thing where you don't necessarily get it and you're all coming at it from a fan perspective. So let me ask you this, Dinesh, from that fan perspective, obviously, you know, from a collector standpoint, yeah, I want to get a first print. And there weren't enough first prints to go around. We all know that because the demand was bigger than you guys expected. And these kind of things happen. But from my perspective as kind of viewing the industry as a whole, I mean, you're going to have somebody mad at you either way unless you nail it, which is so hard to do. So let's flip it around and say, yeah, maybe nobody did show up. You guys only sold 500 copies. Now you've got retailers that have spent money on this product and it's just sitting there costing them money. Maybe it'll sell eventually, maybe not. You've got this glut. And I know I've heard you talk before about having inventory specifically of trades for Valiant sitting in a warehouse not making money, and that money can be used elsewhere. That's something you were trying to avoid, right? I mean, you didn't want to go – obviously, you went you know, too conservative. But if you'd gone the other way, you may have, now you got retailers mad at you, right? So
we,
I think you guys were
kind of We didn't try to go conservative. That wasn't, you're absolutely right about the trades, but we didn't try to go conservative with this number. The thing that I think is makes this difficult, made the first print difficult, is that there's 2,000 to 3,000 stores, comic book stores in North America. There's about 10,000 globally. We're in 154 stores, 200 locations. So let's say there are conservatively 2,000 stores in America, and conservatively there's 200 stores in the Bad Idea Network, 10%. If you were going to sell 100,000 copies of a book, do you then sell 10% of that? Do you sell 10,000 to 10% of the stores? Do they order less because you're not as big a brand as something that's everywhere? Do they order more to make up for the 90% of stores that don't have it? These are questions that are very, very, they're frankly impossible to answer. As Warren said, no one's done this. So what we did is we did our best math. It's very simple math, right? We took a look at how much we thought each store would order. We took the high end of that, our highest possible projection. And then we printed on top of that. And it turned out we'd created kind of club nature. We've created something that people were very excited about. Perhaps we were not honest with ourselves about how awesome that cover is to ENIAC One, how great Matt is as a writer, how many fans he has, how aggressive the stores are going to be that partnered with us. You know, we do think we have the best hand-selling stores, the most aggressive stores. And so when we saw these orders come in, the first thing we did was we emailed all our stores and said, hey, you guys have ordered too much, which, by the way, is almost comical, because at Valiant, we were famous for sending the you've under-ordered this book, it's going to be a big deal emails. So to be able to say you've over-ordered, could you help us out and reduce your orders a little bit? It's uncharted territory. We were surprised. A bunch of stores came in and said, yeah, we'll help you out. We know you're a new launch. We can take orders down to this. Wasn't enough. Besides, the orders kept going up. They kept increasing. So we were stuck in this position of we're having to allocate the book 51%. That's not a position that's beneficial for any publisher. That means half our audience can't get the book that they want. We were able to give every store exactly the number of copies they ordered, split between first and not first prints, but it's not the ideal situation. Certainly mistakes were made on our end, which we're trying to rectify. We'll see.
That's one of the most frequent questions that I've been asked by people reaching out to me. How could you guys not have known about the demand? And from my perspective, I mean, I knew about it, but I live and breathe comics. And I know a lot of my friends who are Valiant fans, you know, they were aware as well. But I also have other people, other guys that have their own YouTube channels that were like, I hadn't heard of Bad Idea before. So, you know, I don't want to.
Here's how, because the numbers aren't out there, and it's probably not appropriate for us to talk about numbers, but I can say this. Here's how we didn't know. There's no book at Valiant that we ever did that has caught fire like this one has. We have, in our very first book at Bad Idea, completely thrown out the projection model we had at Valiant over 10 years. The not first printing alone had larger orders on the Wednesday that the first printing and not first printing were released than most Valiant books do out of the gate. Alone.
And just to echo what Dinesh is saying a little bit, you have to understand that we've spent most of the last decade trying to sell in into stores, into 2,000, 3,000 stores, X-Men, War, Bloodshot, Archer and Armstrong, Harbinger, Shadow Man, Divinity. And most of the time, it was a real uphill sled. It's real tough to compete with Wolverine and Batman and Superman and the X-Men. It's not easy. So extrapolating out from that, you can understand that, you know, if you remove the Valiant universe from there, on top of that, we thought, you know, this is a solid number. So to immediately see on Wednesday people lining outside and lines and the book selling for what it's selling and all these factors, it kind of blew our mind a little bit. You know, thank God for Louis LaRosa and Matt Kent and David Lavin and Dougie Braithwaite and Diego doing a beautiful job on top of that.
But that's a good point, right? So if we look at Valiant and we say, okay, Valiant is Bloodshot sells 10% of what Wolverine sells. Now, what is a brand new company going to sell versus Bloodshot? Is it 10% of Bloodshot? It certainly isn't 100+% of Bloodshot, which is where we find ourselves when you include the not first printing. The not first printing is roundly the largest printer. We've done a higher print run than the first print, but the largest printer we would have done for a character like Valiant. It's insane how many copies of the not first printing are out there.
Well, what do you say to the people? Well, you guys wanted to be small so you could control this. Couldn't you just have called all the stores and said, hey, you know, how many do you need? I mean, I guess maybe what I'm asking is, when did you have to send in your print order? Because I know, you know, you guys are smaller, so you got to do it further in advance. When did you have to actually send in your order saying, hey, we need this many books? And when did you actually find out, hey, this is the amount of books that we're actually going to need? Like, when did you realize there was a gap? Was it because you had to send the print order in before you had an idea of how many books you needed?
Yes. No.
Should talk about talk about the cover process a little bit there.
Sure. Sure. We're going to get into some real, like, in the weeds here, Chase, if you want to.
Oh, yeah. No, this is what people want to know. And this is what they don't understand, where the disconnect happens.
Okay. Look, I love this stuff, so I'm fascinated to talk about it. Here's how it usually works. The brilliance of the direct market is that you can get your orders before you have to print. And the books are non-returnable for the most part. There are several books that are chosen to be returnable a week, but mostly 90% of the books are not returnable. So the brilliance from a business standpoint of the direct market is that you know exactly how many copies are ordered. You can print to that number plus a little bit for damages and returns. You can sell the books in. And if they sell well for the stores, wonderful. They order more. If they don't sell well for the stores, none come back. The book market's very different. The book market, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, et cetera, they order 9 months, if not longer, ahead of the books being in stores. That is, it creates a problem because now you've got to print for what may happen over the next 9 months plus going forward. And those books are returnable, which means they could order 10,000 copies, not sell any, send them all back to you. They don't come back in a form where you can sell them again. They're a little damaged. They look like secondhand. So that's wasted inventory. At best, you can kind of discount them as slightly damaged material and send them back in. So those are the two major systems. What we have a bad idea is a new third system. This is why we keep saying everything we're doing is new and strange. We are, as Warren says, taking our own orders. Let's take a step back. We're soliciting our own books. We're not a Diamond customer, so we don't go through the Diamond system. We do that piece that Diamond does. The previous catalog, we have our own solicitation. We take our own orders. The form that the stores fill out, the coalition that happens on Diamond, we do that. We have a custom-built website that takes orders, the bad idea wholesale ordering system. We do our own invoicing. We do our own collections. We do our own financing. We do our own printing. We do our own delivery of the printing of the printed books to, we were initially going to fulfill ourselves, send the books ourselves. And we did that with the Hero Trade. And that's 154 copies, one per store, 254 locations. That near killed us. So we took a step back and we were like, you know what? At 25 stores, even that maybe was too much, but we thought we could do it. When we've gotten here with just one book, no reorders, no different numbers of copies ordered, it's insane. It makes sense. You think back to Kickstarters, right? Kickstarters, they famously have problems about fulfillment. So we partnered with a third party fulfillment company on the books that we're doing now. That one piece is not ours, but everything else is ours. Diamond, when they get the books, they collate them, they put them in packages, they send them out to stores. That happens over 2 or 3 days. That's how quick that system happens. That happens so quickly, and it allows the publishers to print their books after they get the orders. It allows them to go right up to the end, FOC, something like 20 days before the books are in stores to get their final numbers, print, have them shipped to Diamond, collate, and then out to stores. It's a very tight system. We can't do that. We're not built for that. We don't have the giant mechanism. And we certainly don't have the quantity to do that. So we print before. Now you add to that, Warren's asking, we should talk about the cover. You add to that the fact that we have the best cover the money can buy. There's no expense spared on the covers from what we're doing. Bad idea. And there's a reason for that. Nobody knows our characters. We don't have Wolverine or Batman, as Warren says. So what do? You do everything you can to get people to be excited and interested. When they're in a store, we all know people judge a book by its cover. So we have this incredible cover drawn by Louis LaRosa, colored by Laura Martin, who's an absolute genius. On top of that, you've got that box check. On top of that, most retailers will tell you, 80% of retailers tell you, the best thing that you can do is get someone to touch the book. If they hold a book, they flip through it, we've all done it. You make your decision, even just by the weight of it, by the feel of it, but certainly by looking inside. So we try and do everything we can, all the lessons we've learned from the decade of publishing that we've had, to try and get people to touch the book. So we built a book that has, now I'm getting really into the weeds, okay? 12-point cover stock. What does that mean? Normally, publishing is done on a weighted stock. Usually you do 60, 70-pound stock. You can get 80, 90, 110. There's no 100 for whatever reason. Then you get to the cardstock covers. 8-point, 10-point, which is what Marvel and DC use for their trades. 12-point, which no one uses except now Bad Idea, for its single issues. Insanity. The printer was trying to talk us out of this. On top of that, we double matted both sides, two-sided mat. On top of that, we laminated. So if you were to take, I don't have one here, this is how hard the books are to find, but if you were to take you want to see something fun? All right, watch this. we have here a Brand X comic book. Okay.
Book. That's a good book, man.
A good book.
Who edited that book? That's a good book, dude. Go ahead.
I don't know. The guy's done like 1,000 books. Doesn't matter. You take this comic book. I'm going to do something horrifying here. Okay.
Don't do it.
Tear it. God. See what happens? It tears. If you were to do that with one of our books, I don't have one of our books here. You couldn't tear. Or what happened is you would find yourself, it wouldn't work. And if you were able to get any leeway whatsoever, you would see a thin bit of film because the whole thing's covered in laminate. On top of that, because we're not over yet, we added a spot gloss. The awesome figure on the cover, you see it's all shiny. The logo's all shiny. The back cover's got a little shine to it. That's a spot gloss on top of that. It really captures the eye. It makes someone want to touch it. Captures that like innate instinct that we all have. Each one of these processes is a completely different machine and requires drying time, especially the laminate. The laminate takes a week of drying. So add to the fact that we have to print early, the fact that we have to add 2.5 weeks or more to print covers like this. The covers go before the interiors even. So we send the covers almost 2 weeks before we send the interiors. We can still work in the interiors for 2 weeks while the covers being printed and drying. It creates a perfect storm of, here's a company that has done something that no one's done before with a very small number of stores, with a book that nobody knows about, who knows even what the awareness is. I mean, it's a champagne problem that we have where everyone seems to care when we thought no one would care.
Well, Warren, if this is always going to be the issue, having to send in your orders, you know, so much, send in your order for the printers before you actually get the orders from the retailers, how are you going to avoid this problem in the future? I mean, is this going to be a perpetual problem? You could be generating ill will.
No, I don't think so. I think that we're going to work with our vendors. We're going to work with the retail partners. We're going to work with everyone to try to minimize this, certainly as best as we can. This will not be something that we want to repeat every 30 days. First time out of the box is, you know, look, we're trying to figure it all out. We're building a company. I don't think Dinesh or I expect it to be working, you know, 80, 100 hours a week like we are right now. You know, again, it's a champagne problem. We had a conversation, you know, one of the conversations we've been having over the past couple of days is, you know, we nearly killed ourselves at Valiant, you know, like really. So I think that, you know, our whole team, Josh, Hunter, Adam, we're all incredibly hardworking people, just like everyone else's, man. But we really take an enormous sense of pride in the books. And we really take an enormous sense of pride in the quality of the story. And that's really one of the foundational elements of everything that we do. So I don't think that we'd expect it to be where we are right now. We're really happy about it, but we're certainly working with everyone to make sure that we can minimize this as best as possible, certainly.
We also know our number now. We know when you launch a company, the first book generally, for at least the first couple of years, is your biggest ordered book because it's something new, someone wants to try it. So we have at least our ceiling for what our orders are going to look like. And we're increasing our projections in light of what's happened to make sure we're really going with tankers. We're going crazy with the print run to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Although we should perhaps announce the next allocation. I mean, why not do it here as an exclusive?
Sure.
We're going to be allocating this podcast. So we're only going to be able to give you 51% of the time that we had allocated. No.
But
we were planning on going for 4 hours, so we'll go for 2, and then it'll be fine, right? The last thing I want is, I've seen other interviews you guys have done. Oh, why are you letting them off the hook? Why are you know it's a fluff piece, whatever.
People said that, really?
I haven't seen that.
Come on, man, you're still pulling the punches. Where are these punches? Well,
the conversation you had with Nico, I saw people. You let Dinesh off the hook.
Really?
So
that's fascinating. Nico, the minute that ended, Nico apologized. He was like, I'm sorry I asked all those hard questions, man. Those are the ones in the comments.
Yeah. I think you guys would want the chance to kind of clear the air. So
of course, buddy.
Maybe part of it is the fact that you guys did so well at Valiant and you were so trusted and knowledgeable. People are saying, well, no, Warren's a smart guy. Dinesh is a smart guy. How could they not have known? They must have been manipulating the market on purpose. Dinesh owns this is something else I've heard. Dinesh owns the Key Collector app.
No, I do not. I do not own any piece of Key Collector.
No, yeah, you're invested in it. You own part of it. You're all about the hype. You did this on purpose. You're manipulating the market. What do you say to that?
If we wanted to do that, we would have put 1,000 to 1 variant on it. We would have done a second printing or a third printing or a fourth printing or a fifth printing with successive different covers. We would have gone out and called in every favor that we had to get, you know, maybe I could beg, borrow, and steal and have Yelena Georgievich do a 501 variant or something. I mean, we didn't do any of those things.
All of the things we did at Valiant. I love this because we didn't try to manipulate the market at Valiant many times, as every publisher does.
Every publisher right now, the game is, I mean, wasn't there just like a 1,000-to-1 variant on a book or a
for Berserker.
And, you know, I like Berserk. I'm sitting on my desk. I love Matt. I think it's awesome. I think the book's wonderful. I'm super happy for Boom with their success with it. But this is a different model. We wouldn't be trying to get, you know, the guys will tell you I'm a gigantic pain in the ass about making sure that everyone can read the thing. You know, I mean, I want the story out there. I believe pound for pound, we'll be able to go toe-to-toe with anyone. I mean, we're going to war with Matt. We're going to war with Lab. We're going to war with Doug. I mean, the books we've been able to build over the years, you know, hopefully stand toe to toe with anyone else's. And for me, I have enough confidence in the product. Look, we're going to have books that come out that are not going to be great. We're going to have books that come out that are great. It's just batting average. But for me, I believe that if we can get the books into people's hands and they'll read it, we can build that way. That's the only way to build. It's the only way to build the company. Everything else is transient, is disposable, is will come and it will go. So for me, that's why we did that. That's one of the reasons why we did the not first print, and talking with Adam and talking with Hunter and talking with Dinesh and talking with Josh, you know, how do we make sure that we're not variantizing our second printings, our third printings, our fourth printings, like everyone's doing that. We're just going to do a second printing and that's going to be on the shelves. I mean, I've tweeted out multiple times, I think Dinesh has as well. It's an open order item. Please don't spend a lot of money on eBay for the second printings. We're going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of them. So, you know, I want the books on the shelves. It's really the only way to build the company. So I hear what they're saying and I understand how it could look that way. But for me, you know, I want the books read. I want Matt's work read. I want people to see Doug's art. I'm confident when they see, you know, the first five pages of ENIAC, where we have a U.S. special ops team going out to take out the people who put bounties on U.S. soldiers' heads. And Doug drew this where you could literally take all the word balloons off of the pages and the story would still be effortless. You know, this is why we continue to go to war for our talent. And this is why the talent we bring in are I think some of the best in the industry. And look, this is part of the reason why hopefully they continue to work with us. We've been working with a lot of these guys. I've been working with Doug since Marvel. I've been working with Matt since he launched that Bloodshot one shot for us in, I think, 2014 or 15. You know, because the work that goes into the shelves is good. It helps the creator, it helps the company, hopefully it helps the store. And that's how we've tried to build. I don't know if that's the longest answer in the history of your podcast, but it might be close. But, you know, for me, that's one of the reasons anyway.
Yeah. I mean,
we also don't care, Jace. That's the thing. I think people don't understand. We also don't care to do that. We're not trying to build Marvel. We did that at Valiant. We tried to build Marvel. Everyone tries to build Marvel 2.0 or baby Marvel, try to build an empire. We checked that box. And I think we did it well. It wasn't the outcome that I necessarily wanted. I think a lot of people would like to still be there. But you can't deny that we built a bunch of books. People liked them. They sold well. Some of them are hot in the back issue market, won a bunch of awards. There's a big acquisition. We don't need to do that again. What we're trying to do here is more artisan, is more just a bunch of people that like working together, just wanting to make comics that they want to read. If we were manipulating this, I think that, as Warren says, we would be adding a variant to it. We would probably be, I mean, there's other things we would do. I don't think you would not do variants to do that. And the other thing that we should talk about actually is one of the things that we managed to do when we had to allocate is, again, we were able to talk to every one of the retailers because there's only 200 locations, 154 stores. Adam was able to contact almost all of them. We got a sense that about 99% of the pre-order, 99% of the stores that had pre-orders were able to fulfill their pre-orders with first printings. And so what you're seeing here is kind of it's a perfect storm. It's not just that we didn't realize that the orders are going to be so big. It's that the pre-orders gave us an indication of one type of order. Then the orders on top of that increased dramatically. And then the day of, tons of people came into the stores to buy ENIAC number one that weren't even thinking about pre-ordering this book. So we've got this like crazy escalation of what's happening in ENIAC one. Will they be there for ENIAC two? Will they come for Tankers one? I mean, the fact that the book is a $100 book on eBay doesn't necessarily help that.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it goes back to you personally, Dinesh, are manipulating the market and you've got a, you know, a case of, or several cases of ENIAC number one first printings in your closet, and you're just waiting for the price to go up so you can sell them on eBay, because you clearly want to do all that work to make a few hundred.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a big deal.
$100,000, maybe.
That money, yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't I can confirm that. I don't think that Dinesh is doing that. Right? I think he's doing fine.
It doesn't. The people that are saying that, I kind of don't understand, because it doesn't seem worth all that effort. So I kind of agree with you guys. Well, kind of along those same lines, you know, of not manipulating.
Don't let it be a fluff piece. You can't agree with us.
No. I mean, it just doesn't. I'm just looking at it from a logical standpoint, and it kind of goes along with what Warren is saying, is you want people, you know, maybe the spectacle, maybe the buzz brings people in, but you got to be foundational when you're starting out. You got to have good stories to make this thing sustainable. And I think that goes to the rules that you guys have created. Cause I've also heard people saying, well, they've made all these rules and retailers don't want to jump through the hoops. They don't want to. And I'm like, well, you know, they don't want to do the work. That's on them. But the rules are there for a reason. And they're actually there to, in my mind, to help the shops and to help the readers. So, I mean, can you speak to that, Dinesh? Are the rules there for the shops? Are they for the readers? Are they there for both? Like, what exactly, why do you have these rules?
They're for everyone. They're for us as well. The rules are there because we want to create a specific environment. We get to decide. Unfortunately, we do get to decide as the publisher how we want our product to be consumed, with some caveats. I mean, we can't control everything. We like, or maybe we're traditionalists, we like comic books being read in the form they were intended to be read in, which is a comic book printed so you can see it like this, not necessarily something digital. We want it to be in a store. We like that experience. We like the experience of going physically to a store and being able to pick it up. Have we lost Warren?
He's still there. He's just, his video feed is.
And we built the rules to encourage that kind of behavior. At the same time, there are also rules that we know the certain types of stores that won't sell Bad Idea well won't really want to do that work. And so that kind of weeds them out. We're not saying no to people. They just don't apply.
You guys have to remember that we just spent 7 years
trying to.
No, what I was going to say is, like I said earlier, you guys need to remember that we just spent 7 years trying, 8 years trying to sell into shops that necessarily may not have wanted to carry us. So I think part of the rules, what we're doing is trying to set up a system where we're working with our partners who really want to hand sell the books, who really want to say to a consumer, like, read this book. It's really good. You're going to enjoy it. They know their audience. They know the customers who shop at it. We don't want to be a burden to anyone, you know?
But what if I love Bad Idea so much I want to buy two copies? I can't buy a first print and a not first print.
Go to a different store. You can go to two stores. Look, all the stores have different rules. As long as they follow the rule, one copy per customer, we don't mind. I'm not going to be able to tell. We can't police it to that extent. The few people that want to have the first print and not first print, they'll figure out a way to get it. Buy a copy on eBay after you bought the one in your store. You know, buy the not first print on eBay. Wait 30 days. Buy the not first print then. It's probably going to be $3.99. I don't think that book will hold value. Frankly, what do I know? I didn't think ENIAC 1 would, the first print would do what it's doing. I look at it every day and I'm like just shocked at what's happening to it. But the rules are also there for us, right? At Valiant, we had the, give me an analogy, give me an example. At Valiant, we had the pull box preview, which was just a thin, I think it was a 12-page self-cover book that we would print little previews of the other books, send them out to stores. When we first started doing this, we had about 30 stores that wanted them, and it was incredibly effective. In those 30 stores, we started as people got word that it was doing well to 100 stores, did incredibly well for us. Fast forward 2 years, we're in something like 1,500 stores. The vast majority of those stores are not really Valiant stores. They maybe have one guy like you that comes in and orders everything. They don't need 50 pull box previews, but we can't say to store X, hey, you can't have the pull box previews, and store Y, you can't do that. You're going to get damaged for it. So how do we manage that? And also looking at the printing bill, it went from being something that was valuable to us to something that became a giant burden. We're spending $30,000 a month printing these things. That's a lot of money, especially when it's going to stores that it's not going to make a difference to. So we thought to ourselves, how do we partner with only the stores that should be doing business with us. That way the stores don't have to worry about hurting their feelings. We're still friends with those stores. We buy them a drink at Comic Store. We hang out. We talk. I text the stores that aren't part of the program that are friends of mine. And it's okay. They're not upset. We're not upset. That's what we're trying to do. And I think it's difficult for people to understand because there is a point of view in comics of being everything to everyone. And we don't need to make books that everybody likes. We just want to make books that some people really, really love.
Yeah, I've heard the argument though that you guys are you're gatekeeping because you're only putting them in certain stores and you're deciding and maybe you're not putting them in certain stores that want them. I mean, it's just anybody who any store that wants to do the work and you know to sign up and follow the rules. I mean, you guys aren't saying no to certain stores that apply, right?
There is a wait list. We've had obviously, as you can imagine, a huge influx of applications. So wave three, we're trying to figure out how to get them in. We've not said no to anybody except we recently did permanently ban one store for breaking the rules.
Also, if you go to your store and you pre-order the book, you'll get it. You know, we're working with all of our partners trying to make sure that, you know, you can pre-order it, you'll get it. It's just taking that extra little step to let the store know that you want it, to find one of the retailers. And if there's not a store that's close to you, we have a you know, dozens of stores in our networks that will ship the book to you. So it is accessible. You can get a hold of it. It's just not, as Dinesh noted, everything to everyone available everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard from international fans who are like, yeah, there's not a single store in my entire country that's selling it. I've reached out to friends in the US and there's not one in my area. I mean, that'll change, right? I mean, you guys are going to continue to add stores. Okay. Do you have an upper limit in mind of stores that you say, hey, we can handle this many. That's it.
Look, at some point, if it keeps growing, we'll have to change again how we're doing fulfillment. But no, we have no plans in mind to limit it. We plan to keep growing as people are interested. We've had to throw out the entire plan essentially in the last week that we had built because the company is a bigger company than we thought it was going to be. So we're trying to figure that out. But no, we'll keep adding people. And this mailing. And part of what we want to happen here is people to do a little extra work. That's an uncommon thing and a pleasant thing to hear. But it's up to us. We want the stores to do a little bit of extra work. We want the customers to do a little extra work. We do want to weed out the customers and the stores that don't want to do that work. And in return, we will go the extra mile. ENIAC One is a 48-page book with no ads. That's 48 pages of content with the best cover money can buy. And I think it's a great book. It's worth the effort, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's where some people are coming in with this idea of gatekeeping. And the other thing that I've heard and this is just from one specific person, and it had me thinking about sort of the expectations. The whole idea that you guys are, this is a very LCS centric thing, right? Warren alluded to it. You want to help out the retailers by getting the foot traffic in the stores. Maybe they pick up Berserker, maybe they pick up Nocterra, other books that were released that same day. And there's this sense, at least from this one person, who says, you know, I'm kind of anti LCS at this point because LCS, by its very nature, is gatekeeping. It's saying that these specific people are deciding what is a good comic and what is not, what they're, you know, choosing to carry on their shelf. I think that's a bigger problem, honestly, than I could expect a small publisher to solve, or even the comic industry to solve. I think it goes to the diversity and equality and you know, systemic racism and a lot of big societal problems. But I wanted to throw it out there because they did bring it up to me like, hey, these guys are building up on a model that I think is antiquated. It hasn't changed in forever. So somebody's either got to be able to be so knowledgeable about the industry to go to previews and pre-order that kind of thing, or they've got to, you know, have a different way to be distributed, like digitally, where it is more for everybody rather than what you guys are doing. In a way, it's inherently unequal if you expect somebody to have to walk into a comic shop. So what do you say to that, Dinesh?
I have two thoughts about that. Yes, it's antiquated. The whole business is antiquated. Previews is very difficult. Being able to jump into stories that have been going on for decades is very difficult. Waiting 30 days in between parts of a story is not something people do anymore. On the other hand, comics are the only ink on paper business that's growing. It's incredibly healthy. Even during the pandemic, it is incredibly healthy. There is some voodoo that's happening with the stores, and probably to do with how passionate No one opens a comic book store unless you really, really love comics. It is such a difficult job. It's something I will never do in my life. It's just too tough. It looks far too hard to be able to order 4 months in advance, figure out what you're meant to get in, deal with damages. Maybe it rains that day, have a back stock, diversify, be able to know what Yu-Gi-Oh cards and Pokemon cards are in fashion and the statue. It's just too much work. So I think that the people that do it are very, very passionate about it. I think that's a huge component of why comics succeed. So I'm reticent to break it, but you're right. There's nothing we can do about it. A bad idea. That's a, maybe a Marvel thing to solve, but maybe even beyond them.
Also, what about releasing digitally?
People don't really read digitally, man. I mean, I don't want to hurt anyone's business, but the truth is, and we saw the numbers, any publisher will tell you, digital has been, it peaked at about 20% of physical and has dropped precipitously since then, not even double digits right now. So that extra effort is not worth it to a company like us for, you know, less than 10% increase in readership. And most of that readership, frankly, what we found is sampling. I know I can tell you the way I read digital is I will wake up in the morning on a Wednesday, any books I'm super excited about, I'll jump on whatever app and download them, pay for them, download them, check them out. If I like them, go to the store, pick them up. And now I'm reading the second issue, third issue physically. It's sampling. It doesn't feel like part of the business that we need for that. Because it's not a small amount of work to do that, to build all the metadata, to build those assets. It's not a small amount of work.
Also, just to echo what Dinesh was saying briefly, it was interesting because during about a year ago when the pandemic first hit and the stores were really dealing with when all of the stores were forced to shut down by their states, or, you know, Diamond was going through some issues on their end. It was interesting to see how the whole thing, the whole system, from the freelancers to the stores, to the publishers, really is interdependent on each other. So for me, those stores, I've always shopped in an LCS. That's where I buy my comics. Of course I've been in, of course I've bought comics on Amazon. Of course I've bought comics in big box stores. If I've seen something that I've liked, or I've seen something that I wanted right away and I was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and I needed it or whatever, but I go to my local comic shop all the time. And that really is, you know, I don't think that people understand that really is the spine of our business, that really allows so many creators an opportunity to get their wares, whether it's through Image or whether it's through a Bad Idea or whether it's through Boom or Marvel or DC, to get their books into the store, whether that's work for hire or creator owned. But it's just an extraordinary, it's extraordinarily mature system that really allows us to, you know, walk into stores that'll stock 100, 150 titles every week. I mean, that's an amazing thing. And the diversity behind that is an amazing thing, at least in the content of titles and the range of titles that are available. So for me, you know, it's always been the spine of our business. It was at Valiant, a little less so at Marvel, where there are other avenues to support that business, of course. But, you know, I think it's as much a spine as anything else.
Yeah, and Warren makes a good point. The other thing about digital is exactly what he's talking about. You walk into a store and the store owner is encouraging you, hey, have you checked this title out? Hey, I put this in your pull box. I thought you might like it. We don't have to put it to ring it up if you don't want to. They're encouraging new business. When you go digital, it's the discoverability factor is a huge problem, right? You generally go to digital and you go knowing what you want. You find the book you want, you download it. You're not really browsing. The app isn't making recommendations to you in a way that's effective. So for us, it doesn't make sense to send any customers there when we could send them into the 200 best locations in the world to be able to buy our books and hand sell our books. We know that those places are the best place to sell more and more Bad Idea books and get more Bad Idea customers. So we want to put all our efforts there, all the resources there. We don't have a lot of resources at a company this early. We're hoping people come knowing that they want it.
So you don't feel for lack of a better term, a social responsibility to bring in more diverse voices. I mean, you're working with the same people you worked with at you're working with your friends. I mean, let's face it. So I mean, and you guys are incredibly lucky. You've had an amazing launch. You seem to have a rabid fan base. Any thoughts to, hey, we can use this to actually make improvements, to bring in other voices? Is it too early to talk about?
Yeah, we've got plenty of, I mean, we should talk about, we've got plenty of other voices that have come. We've made new friends, Chase, lots of new friends. We've got, look, May Cat, Melissa Flores. We've never worked with Marguerite Bennett before. We've never worked with Zeb Wells. You have, Warren. I've never worked with Zeb Wells before. David Lapham, someone that's new to me, not to you. So there are certainly a lot of new people coming in. We've put one book out so far, one issue of one book out so far. So I think if you give us more than one issue's worth of a chance, you'll see some new name. In fact, David Lapham's in the first issue and he's a new name. So there's that already.
Okay. My next question that somebody wants to know. So this person specifically reached out. They said, hey, I got this. I had to go drive over an hour to get my book to find the closest store. I ordered it months ago. And then unbeknownst to me, in that intervening year from the pushback, somebody much closer, a store much closer, they signed up. And I never heard about it. And I'm still going driving. I mean, personally, I don't think that's your problem. That's either the store or this guy could have done his own homework and gone to the Bad Idea Locator website and found it. But it does bring up the question of, you guys are small. It's hard to get your voice out there. How can you communicate these things? Do you think you can do a better job?
You can always do a better job. That's why we built Where's Bad Idea, which is the, as you mentioned, the portal that you can go to and you can put your information in, pick a store. It's got a full list of all of our stores. It's up to date constantly. And we'll send that information to the stores and they can get in touch if they want to secure a pre-order. It doesn't guarantee a pre-order. We've got the complete list of stores on our website. We do our best to be as loud as we can on social media and get the press releases out there. But yeah, we don't have a cinematic universe that people are talking about constantly. So it's obviously an upward struggle to try and get the word out there. But people, again, they have to do a little bit of extra work with Bad Idea. He knows now and he can make his choice.
Yeah. And I think that goes to there's a level of, to this vitriol and this animosity. I feel like there's a little bit of level of entitlement. You know, we have digital media that's delivered on demand now with all these streaming services. And the other part is some FOMO. People missed out. They didn't hear about it, right or wrong. So what do you say to that,
Warren? It's not entitlement. It's not, I've heard that a lot. It's not entitlement. That's an interesting word to use. And I understand why people use it, but it's not entitlement. What it is, it's an expectation that we will behave as any modern business does. And we refuse to behave as any modern business does. And that is a strain, there's an incongruous nature to that. Well, why won't you? Well, we don't want to. Well, why don't you want to? It's not worth it to us. But I want you to. Yeah, but we don't want to. I mean, it just goes on forever. Right. And it's a conversation Warren and I, all of us at Bad Idea, have with other companies, right? I wanted to watch the Wonder Woman movie on HBO Max. And I jumped on HBO Max and tried to sign up. And it took me 20 minutes. And it was just too hard. And I gave up. And then people told me the movie wasn't very good. So I never watched it. It's the same thing that will happen to Bad Idea. We will meet a lot of people that say, I really wanted to read your book and I couldn't find a store. And then I just gave up. And that's okay. The difference is HBO Max probably is horrified to hear that I didn't spend the money to watch Wonder Woman. And Warren and I are not horrified to hear that some people couldn't get the books. Again, we don't need to be everything to everyone. We just want to be something people love to a few people. And maybe that's a terrible business model. That's kind of why we named the company Bad Idea, though.
Anything to add to that, Warren?
No, just as the guys noted, or as Dinesh noted and you reiterated, we've had the Where's Bad Idea Locator Shop. I think we've sent over 2,000 leads to our network of stores to try to drive our fans into the stores and make them available. To let them know where it is, to let them reach out if they want. We've just been in the coal mine for the past 8 years, trying to sell our wares to, and you know, we've taken some lessons away from that. And you know, we're trying to build for the long term here. I will say that I think that's extremely important to both Dinesh and to I. You know, slow and steady wins the race. If you put out a great page, it'll be a great comic. If you put out a great comic, it'll be a great series. And just try to chip away at it and slowly build slowly and not have to be in a rush to get our first book optioned and in movies in 18 months and continue that cycle of if it happens, wonderful. And if it doesn't, that's totally cool as well. It's a really good book, I think. So I'm excited for it. And if it stays a comic forever, that is totally cool with me. I don't stress about that stuff. It's just something that we're excited about. And we understand there's a little bit of difficulty at this particular point in time getting a hold of the product, but we think that will change in time.
Yeah. And again, I think it goes to people just don't have any patience these days. And like Dinesh, this is the first book and you guys are learning, and yeah, you're going to make mistakes. I don't think they're malevolent. I don't think they're, on purpose, and you know, they're not intentional, and just let's see how it goes for the next
There's assumptions, right? People making assumptions about us, even here in Warren thinking, I'm thinking people probably don't realize that we're not like we were at Valiant or like any other publisher is trying to sell the most number of copies we can of every book. We didn't look at ENIAC thinking to ourselves, how can we sell 100, 250,000 copies? We looked at the book and said, how can we sell enough copies to let us keep making Bad Idea comic books? That's it. We don't really mind beyond that. If we can sell more, wonderful, but not if it means that we have to sacrifice resources that can go into the comics themselves. The reason that we have 48 pages of content with this incredible printing and a backup story for free all at $3.99 is because we've made choices not to do trades and digital and have an office and all these things. And we don't have those kinds of overheads or those kinds of expenses. And so it actually makes financial sense to be able to make a better book.
And put it into our creators, put it into the creative. That's really where it's all gone. You know, put it into our teams to put the best books on the shelves, because that's what's ultimately going to, you know, keep us alive the longest and allow us to continue to publish.
Yeah. And I think you succeeded in terms of the quality of the first issue. I thought it was really good. Did you guys hear from anybody any fan reaction that, you know, forgetting about all the extraneous buzz and all that stuff we've been talking about, just let's focus on the story, the book, the artwork, the colors. Did you hear from anybody that didn't like it? Because I didn't, and I've been trying to watch all the reviews I can. I don't ever remember seeing a book that was 100%. Like, I didn't hear anybody I didn't hear anybody saying, I didn't like this about the story. I didn't like this. All I saw was people, and maybe it's because the people that didn't like it were quiet, which would also be a first. But I didn't hear anything bad. Did you guys hear anybody who didn't like the actual content?
I haven't a single negative thing about the content of the book at all. You know, we get obviously the comments about the distribution, but not the content.
We really have, when you break it down, we really have four very gifted storytellers. We have Matt, who is a brilliant writer. We have Doug, who is a gifted storyteller. We have David, who has been doing this for 20 years. Stray Bullets is one of the great works of our medium. We have Diego, who's a brilliant collar artist. And Dave Sharp, who puts up with me. Thank you, David, if you're watching this story. I appreciate it to know him, brother. You know that. And we've got a team upstairs that's working their asses off, frankly. So it's really just about we got lucky, and hopefully issue two will carry through. And hopefully our buddies Robert Venditti and Juan Jose Rip and Andrew Dalhouse will be able to carry over that success with Tankers, which is certainly one of the if you liked RoboCop, if you like Starship Troopers, if you like bonkers, silly, amazing stories, we're pretty excited about this one.
What a low bar for them to hit, right? All they have to do now is not have copies that sell out, just have copies in stores, and it's a win. It's better than ENIAC.
I don't know about that. I mean, you put out the next one. Obviously, you want it to be successful. You want kind of the same kind of buzz, but part of that buzz was that it sold out so quickly. I mean, do you want buzz because it's still demand and not enough people can get it? Or would you rather have buzz because, hey, let's get the focus back on the content. Everybody's talking about it because it's a great book.
I don't even think that we want buzz, man. It's not like a thing that we need. Buzz is lovely. It's great. If this book came out and people like you read it and were like, hey, I really like it. I've known you guys for a long time. I like this book. I'll keep buying it. And nobody knew cared, we would have been fine. That's what we would have expected. In fact, we expected most of the people like you, Jace, that we've known that have been supporting us to not come with, to stay wherever, you know, they were reading before. So this is just like our cup runneth so over. Who knows what's going to happen to Tankers? At this point, we're not trying to predict what's happening next. I think that would be a mistake. So we'll see. Maybe it sells out. I don't know how that could be possible. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they're all sitting there on shelves and no one wants them. I don't know.
What about you, Warren?
The only way to build, I think, is just through story and through content and to create excitement around the book. So if it's great to see the success of the book. It's great to see the demand for the book. It's great to see the response on eBay and whatnot, you know, it puts a smile on my face. But that's not the goal of the company. The goal of the company is to simply build slowly, build stories that we're proud of, that our writers are proud of. That really is the case. That's only the guys, they'll tell you I've been a relentless pain in the ass for the last 10 years about that, man. So, you know, for me, it's carried over here. And Dinesh is as well, man. I mean, you know, this is, you know, it's a, one of my great joys of working with Dinesh is that it's all about story all the time as well. So, you know, I think that that's the North Star of our company. That was the North Star for the years we were together at Valiant. That was my North Star of Marvel. And it carries over here. We're not trying to get a 5,001 variant cover and put 5,000 comics on shelves that nobody wants or wants to read. And I'm not talking about Berserker, of course, because I think that's a great story. I think Matt did a great job with it. You know, I'm excited to I think Ron's a monster as an artist. But what I just mean in general, this is a trend that we've seen across the industry where you have some kind of weird variant that's sought after and it's $100 in month one. And then 6 months later, it's $8. You know, we're not running that model. The model we're running is story, story, story. And, you know, whatever allows us to continue to walk that path for me is the thing that we'll return to. And we're trying to surround ourselves with a crew of people who believe that foundationally as well. Because ultimately, when you look at the books that people still talk about, Sandman, Preacher, the whole Vertigo line, you know, all the Stan stuff, the Jack stuff, all that boils down to his character and story. And that's what ultimately will really hold. The books that we talked about when we were launching this were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Bone, kind of those classic books that, you know, if you're old enough, you read up reading in the shop. And you know, I remember going and buying like X-Men 137 because my shop got it because I was collecting before I had trades and I was trying to fill out my X-Men run. I mean, for me, this is just part and parcel of the way that I've always read and loved comics. You know, I love walking to the shop and seeing all the new books and picking them up and flipping through them. So for me, this is just a continuation of that. So, you know, I'm happy to see the response to it, but as Dinesh noted, we've just been in a coal mine for 7-8 years. And I say that lovingly. Of course, it wasn't a coal mine, you know, but it was a grind, man. And we're not trying to replicate that again. We're just trying to build and have fun and work with our friends.
I should unpack that. What Warren means, because obviously we were very lucky to be at Valiant and have the IP that we did and have the success we did. The expectation at Valiant was to be Marvel. And that's a heavy burden because we don't have the giant parent company. We don't have the years of publishing that Marvel did. We don't have the cinematic universe, the video games, et cetera. So there was a lot of pressure there that as Warren says, took its toll physically on all of us. And we'd like to avoid that here, which is probably partly what you're seeing in the decision-making. Let's just do 2 books a month. Let's try and get to the fun stuff.
How many shows did you go to in 2016, brother? Do you remember?
To me?
Yeah.
46, 47, something like that. 47.
That's 1 week, bro. I mean, you know, I try to go to 4 or 5 shows a year, maybe 6, because, you know, mostly I'm in the office and building and, you know, but Dinesh is on the plane, you know, 52 weeks a year, pumping Valiant at cons. I mean, that takes its toll. I mean, physically traveling, you know.
I can't do that anymore. My body's, I was a younger man.
And look, we're blessed. We're not in the Marine Corps. You know what I'm saying? No one's shooting at us. We're lucky. You know what I'm saying? Keep it all in perspective, bro. But what I just mean is that's not the game plan we're running here. I don't think Dinesh or I got into this to run that game plan again, man.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And as proof, I point to those first couple rules, right? One copy per reader, and the shop can't sell it for more than cover price. To me, that says you want to get the book out into as many hands as possible, not have, you know, 3 people come in and buy up all the copies. And you want to be sure that the people that want to read it can get it for a reasonable price, you know, for the first month that it's out. Also, I would say the fact that the not first printings are going to be an open order item for an extended period of time. I think I heard Dinesh say you're going to try to keep, if it's feasible, to keep it available for a year. All those things tell me that, yeah, it's story first and you want to build a readership that come back because they love the stories, because these are quality stories. Would you say that's accurate, Dinesh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I'm just digesting the kind of Machiavellian version in which we own Key Collector and we plan this. And it gives it, it's really nice because it gives us a lot of credit, right? To be able to say, these guys knew that all the things that you're told not to do in publishing are things that you should be doing and they would have this impact. With Marvel, who has all the resources and is trying to do exactly this, never having figured it out, is kind of, it's kind of nice. We're smart. We're like super smart. I like that. No, we literally were just trying to think of the things that would build the company that is a readership company. One of the most controversial rules that we built is that the stores have to order the same number of copies on issue 2, 3, 4, whatever, however long that series is, as they do on number one. And we told all the stores, this is not a case of us trying to get you to up your orders on one. It's a case of us trying to get you to, for instance, on ENIAC, figure out where you think number four will be, and then order number one, two, and three the same way. And then if you have more sales, supplement that, because we're going to do this not for sprinting. You can reorder with us, but don't go in heavy. We don't want you holding the bag, which is the opposite of how every publisher, including Valiant, operates.
Yeah, it's crazy. But again, I point to the rules and I say, you know, unless you guys really have an ENIAC computer that figured all this out, it just doesn't make some of these things that people are saying just don't make sense. So I'm going to go and read verbatim now the questions that we got on the forum.
Okay.
And we'll see whichever one of you guys
want to go now. Thank you, Jace. We appreciate it, buddy.
No, they're not too bad.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. JCP, who actually he was second in line behind me at our LCS. He got there. I got there.
I heard that story on that. Yeah. Warren and I were watching the last one that you did. It's so sad.
I felt bad.
So early.
As soon as he said he was a big Valiant guy, I knew. And then I felt a little bad, but anyway, he wants to know, when is Megalith coming out and will some of the Bad Idea books have original art for sale? I mean, that might be a question for the actual artist, but any idea for Megalith?
Slow and steady wins the race. Lewis is an absolute genius, as you know. But when we borrow him for ENIAC number one, it takes a little bit of time for Megalith. But Lewis is one of my oldest colleagues in the industry, one of the just best people you'll ever meet, an absolute genius. But you know, we're chipping away at things, and in time it will come out. The pages, I'm sure the pages will be for sale eventually.
They're for sale now. Please go buy them. Everyone should go buy the pages.
Yes. Go buy the pages. But you know, Lewis is a beast and the book is gorgeous and it's beautiful and it's brilliant. Have we announced the writer on that? Did we announce the writer yet?
I don't think we have. I don't think I've been warned. You're avoiding the big plan that we have for Met. We have a big, you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Don't reveal that here, bro. We need to be patient with that.
Big plan. Big is the opening word.
Okay, then you guys are going to have to come back on and give me that exclusive when the time comes.
Big. No, think about big. It's a big plan.
Okay.
Bad Idea is easily the dumbest company in publishing. This is big. It's gonna be big, man.
All right. Well, let's move on. Next question from Sunlight on Snow. Is there ever going to be a shared universe?
I can't wait. Someone watches this again in 6 months when we've announced what that thing is. And they're just like, these guys are idiots. That's what they meant. These guys are complete idiots.
He says, yeah, there's ENIAC tankers and Megalith that could easily be connected somehow. So any plans? I mean, you said you're not trying to be Marvel and have a connected universe, but it could work. Any thoughts?
Connected universe, Warren.
Slow and steady wins the race. One piece at a time. That's all that I'll say. There definitely are seeds in different places, but let's take it one book at a time. We're just one issue in. Give us a little bit more time, and the picture will become clearer.
Not a single issue that we have published officially a Bad Idea has not been connected to the others. So far.
I love the name Sunlight on Snow, though. One of my all-time favorite characters from the brilliant Joshua Dice Art. I think that was Dougie also, right? Didn't Dougie create Sunlight on Snow? I think he did. Great name.
All right, this next one, it may be the toughest question you guys get from me today. It's from Blood of Heroes, Greg, as we all know. He wants to know, boxers or briefs?
Boxer briefs.
Okay. Slow and steady. Slow and steady in time.
All right. Maybe Greg, you're going to have to ask Dinesh that one in person. All right. NYC JD wants to know, how long will the B-sides continue? Love the trade dress and format. Will this continue as well? Any scoop on future creative teams and anything in development that will go longer than 4 to 6 issues?
That's like 9 questions. Doesn't he get one?
No, I didn't put a limit on it.
Okay. It's not one per customer?
No, it's not. There's no rules here when a bad idea takes over the comic source.
Some of my favorite things that we're working on right now are the B-sides. We have a bunch of 8-page stories, 9-page stories, some every 10, that are just awesome. We're getting in the art, and Dinesh and I'm texting Dinesh or sending stuff, and just looking at each other like, this stuff is insane, and nobody's doing it. Also, a bunch of our writers have really hit a nice clip with the B-sides. They're almost like vignettes or short stories as opposed to, you know, one of the great things about what I like what we're doing is we've got a lot of 4-issue books, got a lot of 3-issue books, and what's really like a very tight 88-minute movie or something. You know, sometimes we'll be sitting in the movie theater and you'll be in like hour 2.5 and you're like, what is going on? This is just dragging. Whereas it's just like where, you know, so we're building it really tight. We're building it really fast, really, dare I say, violent. But just really trying to move at a real good clip where there's enormous amount of information in every page. And we're not padding the thing. We're not trying to fill out a 6-issue trade. We're not trying to just bulk up the book for the sake of getting another issue out there. So it's really, 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 it's like a boxer in great shape. We're really just trying to go muscle, you know, kinetic action. And those 8 pages are some of my favorite things we're working on. We've got some super fucking weird stuff coming up. Oh, pardon my, sorry for cursing. Okay. We've got some super strange stuff in the
no rules, Warren.
We've got super 8 pages coming up that are really like bonkers, but in the best way possible. Just almost a throwback to like strange 70s comics in some places. Just like that super weird Marvel period of like where they just went like crazy cosmic, or some like the weird early Vertigo stuff where it's just like super strange. So I'm stoked. I love the 8-pagers. I love the fact that we've got 2 stories in every book. We've got a lot of really awesome stuff coming. I'm sure you can tell I'm pretty pumped up.
One of the things about the I was realizing as Warren's talking, one of the things about the 8-pagers that makes them so exciting is that it allows us to tell a story in a way that you can't otherwise tell a story in comics. That limited space means that you don't have the same responsibilities because it's also being packaged into another book. ENIAC can take the burden of only the commercial responsibilities, while the hero trade in the back can just kind of be whatever it wants to, which gives us the freedom to really do things that normally are, again, bad ideas in terms of publishing. And it makes me realize that one of the things that people probably aren't factoring in to bad idea and why we're doing things the way we are is just how selfish we're being. You asked earlier, don't you feel like you have a social responsibility? We don't really. I mean, we're just kind of doing this for ourselves more than anything. If anyone wants to come along, readers or word stores, welcome to, but it isn't the goal of it. The 8 pages are there because we want to tell stories that are weird and don't really belong anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, you might pick up a 4-issue limited series about a pizza detective at a different company, but for us, it's going to be a tight 8-page story. About if you ever wonder what it's like for a detective at a pizza chain agency, we've got that story coming, and it's a doozy.
Warren, that might be the weirdest one. That is the Warren loves it so much. So much he loves this one.
Weirdest one. But it's beautiful and it's well-written. So we're, you know, Polina just did an 8-pager for us, which is insane.
That one is...
You know, we've got a bunch of hero trade stuff coming up. We've got one of my favorite artists of all time, who is one of the 4 or 5 biggest icons in probably, I don't know, I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but one of the greatest artists in the history of the medium has done an 89-pager for us. And he's a dear friend of mine. And I'm just very lucky to have him here with us. So we've just got from soup to nuts. And we've got a young new artist coming in. That's going to be in the back of, I think, Tankers One, who's pretty new. And this stuff is just unlike anything that's out there. So, you know, it's just, it also as an editor, it's like a, you know, I mean, this is just carte blanche. It's wonderful, bro. I mean, this is just exciting and you know, I'm stoked. This is good stuff.
Well, it sounds like not only are the B-sides not going away, you guys may have to do some sort of anthology to get, if you have so many of these great 8-pagers. You may not have.
It started that way. Actually, it's funny you say that. It started that way. Well, initially, we were thinking was we would do all these books, and then we would do anthologies every now and then. And we just had so much fun with the anthology components that we decided, you know what? Let's just put them in. Let's divide them up and put them in every book. Every book will be an anthology in a way.
Yeah, and Matt can just write us an 8-pager about a superhero in the trunk of a car having his body carved up and selling the body parts, and Labin can draw it, and you know that's the hero trade, and you know. That may not work as a one shot. It may not work as a 4-issue thing, but when you have someone who has an eye for storytelling like David Lapham does, you close that book down and it feels like Tarantino wrote and drew it. And you're just, you know, Dinesh and I were sending this out the door and we were just saying to each other, like, I think this is one of the best things we've ever done. Do you know what I mean? Like, this really is a masterpiece and it's 8 pages. I mean, I'm patting myself on the back here and Dinesh as well, obviously, Jace, but, you know, we're really proud of the work. I mean, again, I'm sure you can tell from the tone of my voice, it's just, it's all about the story, man. Like, if we can just find these little kernels and these little gold nuggets, you know, the company will propel itself, bro.
But it doesn't actually, but it doesn't just end there. Because if the question is, how long do we have the B-sides planned for? We're doubling down. We've got these ridiculous handbook entries. One you've seen one so far on the Not First Printing, written by our man right here, Warren Simons. And we have a second one that, you know, the next time we go to a Not First Printing, we'll probably include it. They're also, again, even more ability to go just absolutely nuts. We're going to try and push to that place where people are like, please stop. Stop. It's bad now.
Well, if it is all driven by story, then would there be, do you see a situation where you would have a story that goes longer than 4 to 6 issues?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And then can you say it all? I mean, maybe not announce any creative teams that you haven't yet announced. You're probably not ready for that yet, but do you guys at least know when the second wave will be announced? Do you have a date in your mind, or is that still something you're working out based on
the first wave? The second wave? We don't have to do a second wave, do we?
It's up to us.
Don't have to.
It's well, of course we know. We know. I hope we know. It's the third wave that you guys should be bringing us. Second wave is easy. We're going to announce that. It's going to be a bunch of new books. It's going to be awesome. The third wave, you're going to be like, wait, what? What are you, what? Are you allowed to do that? I don't think you're allowed to do that. We're going to be like, we can do whatever we want. Too bad. It's going to be fun.
All right. Fair enough. Well, next question comes from the Ferg 714. Is, if there was a chance of, and I think I know the answer to this, but if there was a chance to owning the rights to the Gold Key characters, would you take it? Do you think 2 books enough is enough to hold interest?
Oh man, Warren. I mean, everyone, you know what I think about the Gold Key characters. How do you feel?
Well, let me see if I can get this right. Is Magnus 14 your favorite comic? Is that what it was, Brad? Did I get that wrong? Magnus 3? I love the Gold Key characters, of course. I'm not going to say something catty here. I love Solar. I love Magnus. I love Turok. When we first got to Valiant, lots of people told me that we should be careful because we don't have those characters anymore. And the universe came from that, and we kind of just trucked ahead and proved them wrong anyway. I think they're wonderful characters. I think Solar, Man in the Atom, the series that Jim did with Barry is one of my favorite things. I think that stuff's absolutely brilliant. You know, would it be great to work on pre-established characters again? I mean, it's a different avenue than what we're doing. I think we do it well, and I think it would be fun, but I don't think that's any in our plans in any capacity at the moment. Those characters are great. We love them. What was the second part of the question, Jace?
Do you think 2 books per month is enough to hold interest? Why 2 instead of 3 or 4?
I was going to bring this up a little bit before, but also that's one of the things that really allows us to keep the quality high. It really allows us to you know, working in Valiant, we really capped out at probably 6, 7, 8 books a month. I think 1 month we got up to like 10, 11, 12, and the wheels started to shake a little bit.
We got up to 15. We got up to 15. That was the highest.
Yeah, like 15 books, and it was just, you know, it was like trying to hold the thing together with duct tape. But I think that 2 a month right now for the next few months, the first year, hopefully, maybe the first couple of years is great. You know, let's lean in. Let's do 2 books a month. Let's make it an event every time a book hits the shelves. Let's treat them special. We could easily publish 8, 10 books a month. You know, the quality would drop precipitously. You know, it would be a much different thing than we're building right now. You know, again, as I said, as Dinesh likes to make fun, as I said 4 times on this podcast already, slow and steady wins the race. I think if we build slowly, I think if we build meticulously, you know, I think if we take some of the lessons that we learned in previous spots, it'll be helpful. What do you think, Dinesh?
I think it's almost certainly not enough to hold interest. And then I think it doesn't really matter to us. I don't want to kill myself. 8 books a month at the quality we were doing the Valiant. I mean, we were really in danger of somebody having a horrible physical problem. No, actually, you don't want to go further. Many people do. I have a permanent physical issue. Warren has a permanent physical issue because of it. Hunter was in a moon boot for like a year from stress. I mean, everybody, the number of emergency room visits was crazy because you're just putting too much. We're not built for that. Human body's not built for the kind of work we were doing. 2 books a month keeps the quality very high, and it keeps everyone at Bad Idea alive. Those are two pretty good reasons, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
We also have a real war chest behind us right now. I mean, the stuff that's on my wall right now is just, Megalith is there. Dysart projects are there. Marguerite's projects are there. We've got art that's just, we've got some stuff coming up from writers and artists that we haven't announced yet. So it's really, we're keeping some powder dry, and it's a beast, man. I really feel like pound for pound, we're going to be able to, for the weeks that we release a book, for the people who buy Bad Idea books, those will be, I always hedge. We're not perfect. We're it's art. It's difficult to manage and control. It has a life of its own in a certain way, but I'm confident that we're going to be able to really make some noise and put out some good books.
All right. Next question is from Possum Grease. He wants to know, any plans for an NFT only comic release? That definitely sounds like a bad idea personally, but I don't know.
These NFTs are crazy. We've had so many inquiries about NFTs recently. It's too new. Who knows? Who knows? Does anyone even want one? I don't think anyone even wants one.
Well, I just saw today that the first NFT artwork or whatever went for something like $69 million. God, please no. I want to support you. I want to read all the stories, but I don't have millions of dollars to spend on an NFT Bad Idea book.
If someone wants to pay $69 million for some NFT a Bad Idea, we will sell it to them. And then we will take that money and we will just probably do even crazier things because we'll have even less reason to have to worry about the commercial aspects of what we're doing.
If you'd like to purchase one of our books for $70 million, we will make that happen. I can guarantee.
Reach out to them on social media. If you have $70 million burning a hole in your pocket, they'll make it happen. All right, another question from JCP. Will there be a pin for each new title?
For a lot of the titles. Probably not for every single one. There'll be one for Tankers.
Okay.
There won't be one for Sleigh Bells, because I hate Sleigh Bells. I don't care what Warren says.
You don't like the idea of Santa going Rambo?
I've been on the phone with the printer trying to figure out how we can do disappearing ink, so that we can print the book and Warren can see it. And then by the time he gets to the store, it's gone, erased.
This one's going to be a gem. I was able to luckily get my buddy Zeb Wells, who wrote a bunch of absolutely brilliant, wonderful books for me at Marvel. I tried to tempt his ear when I was at Valiant a few times, but he was running a TV show at the time. And he's just a brilliant writer. And we got LaFuente, who launched Archer and Armstrong for us, relaunched it for us. And it was one of the most beautiful books we published. David's an absolute genius. So I'm excited for this one. A hunter goes out and sees a reindeer or sees a deer over a ridge. And you're never supposed to apparently shoot a animal on a ridge. And he does. And he accidentally takes out one of Santa's reindeers. And then the rest come barreling down a hill and they all die. And, Santa just kind of looks down and he's my babies and focuses on the town. And we go from there. Police arrive. He goes, is there a veterinarian on duty? And, they mace Santa and then it's all hell unleashes.
I got to tell you, man, I'm on Santa's side here, not on the side.
Yeah, me too, dude. Santa's going to level it. I'm on Santa's side as well, man.
Yeah, let's do it. Last question is, if you guys do decide to make an NFT book, wouldn't that break the rule of no digital?
It's a great question.
This is a ridiculous question. What are we talking about NFTs for? No one's going to be talking about NFTs in 6 weeks.
If you have $70 million and you want us to break the rules of no digital, you get in touch with us and we'll discuss, okay?
Right. Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Well, those are all the questions. I thank you guys. I think you answered everything honestly. I know there's still going to be a segment of fans out there that and retailers or speculators or whatever that just simply don't believe that you didn't do this on purpose. And to those people,
I love that. I really encourage that. We did do this on purpose. This was done 100% on purpose. Go to eBay, pay a lot of money, and buy an NFT coming soon.
That's right. But don't spend money more than cover price on a not first print.
Correct.
only first.
I spent more than cover price on the not first.
So subscribe to Key Collector. It's a great app.
Every time you click on an icon, a dollar goes into Nesh's pocket. So, yeah. But I will say this. You know, you guys are small. You're starting out. Obviously, there's some growing pains. I think the key is communication. You know, kind of avoid these kind of things. So, where's the best place? Like, if people want to be on top of it and make sure they don't miss out next time, where's the best place to get bad idea news? Like, where should we be following you? How are you guys gonna try to, you know, improve that communication?
Sign up for the mailing list. That's the best way. Social media. We try and put everything on social media. Those are the two best ways. Other than that, we're going to try and get the word out there through the press. But if you're on a mailing list, if you follow us on social media, that's the best way.
At Bad Idea Hello on Twitter. You know, we're pretty active on there. And the mailing list is great. We've got a bunch of different mailing list stuff going now that really is informative about where things are coming. Solicitation dates, final letter cutoffs, stuff like that to really plug in on what's happening and where. Those are your best bets.
Great. And there's links to that in the show notes, everybody, in the comment section on our on YouTube. You can find the Twitter account. You can find the website where you can go and sign up for the newsletters. So I think, you know, all the information is there. Do a little work, do a little legwork. You can get yourself some great books and be part of the community. So again, guys, great to see you. I look forward to the day the conventions return.
And yes,
each other in person instead of doing things like this. But again, I think you've found something here. So congrats on a very successful launch, and you know, really looking forward to seeing what's next, seeing how, you know, the second issue of ENIAC does, seeing how Tankers does, when the second wave comes around, don't forget, you guys owe me an exclusive on that.
For sure, Jason.
We all agree.
Appreciate you taking the time, pal.
Thanks, man. Now that we're off the air, thanks for the puff piece, dude. That was really helpful.
No problem.
Oh, shit. We're still recording?
To you listeners, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.